So look, if you want to grow your wealth, your income, and increase the amount of time off, then these are the shortcuts that can help. Welcome to the Wealth Creation Podcast. And good morning, everybody. It's Dan Latto speaking. Hope you're well today. I don't know what day it is again. Let me see. It's Thursday. It's 20th of January 2022. So if you're listening to this on a podcast several years from now, welcome. Hope you're well. Hope I'm still around. In which case, come and say hello, obviously. So in today's session, this is the Property Cash Flow Show, our live podcast, where we like to talk about property, basically, because that's where we've made most of our wealth and our cash flow comes from and so on. So we've been in property for 23 years or so. One of the very best decisions I ever made by a long stretch. And all my friends at the time, and not just friends, but people that I worked with, oh, don't buy property. Oh, you don't want to be doing that. My mate did that. And oh, they ruined it. They put pizza boxes on the walls and, you know, you hear all these bad stories, and kind of the thing that you don't hear is you hear the good stories, but you hear the good stories in kind of a bad way. And what I mean by that is you hear the good stories with people driving Lambos, and it's like, that's just ridiculous. They're still working 60-hour weeks driving these Lambos to pay for the Lamborghini, right, and the Ferrari and so on. And it's like, I didn't want to be like that. I wanted to be a cash flow investor so that we invested money into property, and in return, we got regular income coming back out. And then, you know, we've bought and sold a lot of properties, and we've bought and held a lot of properties. And throughout all that period, we're where we are today, 23 years in, living next to the med, and we've done okay. We're cash flow investors. We can give it all up tomorrow. I can cancel the digital marketing agency. And actually, our income just keeps going up because rents are rising. And over a period of time, rents are going to rise. You know, over the next 5 years, they'll rise again. 5 years after that, and 5 years after that, and 5 years after that, they'll just keep on rising. It's just the nature of the beast. You know, that's why we got into it in the first place, because we knew that if we're buying a property at, like, say, 100 grand, 100 grand in 20 years' time is not worth the same 100 grand that we actually purchased it for. It's worth maybe £60,000 in real terms, because, you know, I've not got a pound coin on my desk, but the value of your pound is constantly going down, whereas the value of the house is constantly going up. Yeah, it might drop every so often, but generally it just keeps going up and up and up, doesn't it, you know? And people go, oh, it can't go anymore, and then it does. And then other people go, oh, no, that's it, it's in a bubble, and it might have been a bubble, and it crashes. And then guess what? 10, 20 years later, it's higher than it was before. And it's the same with rents. Rents just keep going up and up and up and up. And so getting into property for me was absolutely the absolute right thing that I should have done. And it took me like 6 years. I was 26 when I first bought it, and I'm 49 now, turned 50 this year. And, you know, in those last 23 years, we've gone through all sorts. We've gone through market crashes. We've gone through cannabis farms. Not my own ones. I mean, tenants' cannabis farms, right? I'm not growing weed on the side. It's not a bad idea. I live in Spain. You can actually grow your own weed, but it's not my cup of tea. So, but we've gone through all of it. Tenants not paying, tenants trashing the place. We've got a tenant right now. We just had to pay £1,000 waiting for a court date to get him out. Refuses to pay rent, what moves, in full-time employment. And it's like, you know, it's just part of the course of being a landlord. And it's just what you do. You just have to deal with these things. And, you know, every so often, especially in the past, not so much now, that's for sure. But every so often, I probably still feel like this sometimes. I think, oh, I'm so fed up with being a landlord, I'm just going to give it up. And, you know, when I've had those moments in the past, we've definitely been stronger in the past because our income wasn't as high back then, and so on. Whereas, you know, we have a tenant that doesn't pay now. It's like, oh, it's fine. We're just, you know, and we use court systems all the time because we're above board, right? So we just go through the court, and it's a bit of a pain because we wanted that cash flow, but it doesn't really affect us negatively. But when we've gone through those periods of time where it's like, oh, I'm so fed up, I'm just gonna stop. When we've gone through that period of time, what we think about is we don't want the lowest common denominator in society, as in the, you know, the dregs of the world who refuse to pay rent, refuse to move out and just, you know, ruin it, put shit on the walls. Why are we going to let those sort of people determine my own financial future? And that was a decision I made probably 15 years ago, you know, 20 years ago, really early on in the start of my property investing career, because I didn't understand how stuff worked and it was all hard back then. And, you know, when people say property's risky, and it's like, no, your lack of experience is what's risky. You know, I can buy 10 more properties today and will I rent them? Ooh, will he rent them? Ooh, of course I bloody rent them.
Like, we know how to rent stuff, you know? So the risk is removed completely. What if they all trash it? They don't all trash it. We know we've got 23 years of experience. We've managed hundreds of properties through the letting agency. People trashing your property is a very rare occurrence. People not paying rent, that happens. But, you know, the decision that we made, moving into property, is absolutely the right decision. So in this session today, I want to talk about how to buy your first property, and we want to do it in a low-risk way, and that's what we're going to cover today. Yeah, you can put £1 million into, well, £1,000 into crypto, and then you can lose it all, but you don't want to do any of that, okay? We want to just buy it in the most boring possible way that we can, that's sustainable over a period of time. We don't want to do anything dodgy. We don't want to get bounce back loans from the government and put that into property, which I know some podcasters have talked very brazenly about. And I'm like, I think you might be entertained at your majesty's pleasure with that one, because I think it's fraud, but I don't know. Anyway, we don't want to do any of that. We just want to do it in a boring, bog-standard way, a way that's virtually guaranteed to make you wealthy over a period of time. But this is the thing, the reason why people don't do it. It's that bit in the sentence that I just used, over a period of time. People go, no, I don't want to do that. I'll be an old man by the time I'm 50. I turned 50 this year. and it's like, well, you won't be an old man because you've left work by then. That's the whole point. I mean, you can go to the gym, you can eat better, you can walk on the shores of a med, you can go paddle surfing. That soon reduces your age. People don't want that. People want to get rich really fast. And it's like, it's high risk, high volatility, and we don't want any of that. So let's get rich boring, but let's get rich, right? That's the plan. So in today's session, we're going to talk about a low risk way of buying property number one. And it's boring, right? This is the whole point of this being boring. But the very first thing that you need to do, if you want to start buying your property, it might not even be your first. It might be your second, your third, your fourth, your fifth, your tenth, your hundredth. It doesn't matter. But what you've got to do is you've got to allocate the money towards deposits. Now, if it is your fourth or your fifth or your sixth, you can refinance, bring some money back out, and that makes life a bit easier. That's what I did. Harder today because you can't offset the interest payments against that rental payment. Section 24 has ruined that. Excuse me. So you can't do that. But that's not to say you still can't do it. It's just slightly different. It's just a little bit harder. And also, if you're buying through a limited company, you can refinance and you can use that interest payments against the rent anyway. Just, you know, the rental income has to stay in the company. Then you've got to find a way of bringing it out of the company and so on. But the very first thing that you should be doing, and I don't care how old you are, if you are 18 and you are watching this, you should have an ISA. Okay, if you're 50 and you're watching this, you should have an ISA. If you're 78 and you're watching this, you should have an ISA. The reason why we talk about an ISA, and again, you know, this is not financial advice. Please see a financial advisor about ISAs, okay? Buy the books, do your research. It's a podcast, for God's sake. It's not legally binding. Do your own research, right? But you should have an ISA. And the reason why you want an ISA is any money that you get, any money that you earn, any money that you're gifted, anything like that, that money can go into an ISA. And if you put £1,000 into an ISA and it magically turns into £10,000, you've made a gain of £9,000. But because it's in an ISA, it's tax-free. So it's an ISA is a wrapper. It wraps up your money, and any gains that that money makes, you can just draw down. You have to put it on your tax return. There's probably a space for that. I don't know. My accountant does mine. But there's a space for that somewhere, probably, that says, yeah, this is money that I earned, but it was from an ISA, so it's tax-free, so please don't tax it. And they won't tax it. That's why you want an ISA. If you're putting money into a savings account, and you can put it into an ISA that's a savings account. It's called a cash ISA. But if you're just putting money into a savings account, you're going to get taxed on that. Any gains, you know, if there's 0.01% interest that Lloyds gives you or whatever it is, they'll tax you on that, even though it's so small. Whereas if you'd have put it into an ISA, it's not taxed. Now, one of the reasons also why you want an ISA is that you want to start buying like an index fund. So if you're putting away £100 a month, every single month, into an index fund, by the end of the year, you've got 1,200 quid, but you haven't got 1,200 quid. Because if you're putting it into an index fund, like I use the Vanguard, and there's two types, there's the accumulator and there's the, what is it, accumulator and cash flow, I think. One grows faster than the other, but the other's about giving you more cash back out, you know, to live on. But it's up to you which one you want to do. Again, seek financial advice, do your research and so on. use Hargreaves Lansdown. You can, if you want to do it all on your own, you can do. But if you, if you're not that aware of financial stuff, you need to start reading. You need to really be educated financially. I speak to so many people and they are financially illiterate. I don't know what an ISA is. I don't know what a pension is. I don't know how any of this stuff works. So before you even put any money into it, buy your books on what an ISA is. Do your research. Listen to Financial Advisors podcast. Do your, from the UK specifically, okay? Not the American ones, because they work on different systems. They have a 401k. Like, I don't know anything about a 401k. So listen to the UK ones. But open yourself an ISA. Now, you've got to start putting some money into it. This is the key, and we'll talk about that a little bit earlier, a little bit lower down. So the other thing is that you want an ISA because you're going to have this regular income, this regular saving going into that ISA, and it's going to grow slowly. Will it dip from time to time? Of course it will. Will it catch back up from time to time? Of course it will. And over a period of time, 10, 20 years, it'll start to grow. Now, we're not going to keep our money in there. It's just a protection against inflation, really. That's why we do it. If the FTSE 100's going up 4% a year, let's say, and I did some research before we came live, it's about 7% of the returns on the FTSE 100, apparently, from the website. I can't remember which website it was, but that's the return. But you want to just be getting between 4 and 7% returns, and it's just a hedge against inflation. Really, that's it. Really, you're saving this money every single month, and this money is going to go towards your deposit on the property, effectively. But why have I put not crypto? Why do we not want you investing in crypto? And I'm not saying that you should never invest in crypto. First of all, let's just get the language right. When you invest in crypto, you ain't investing in shit. You ain't investing in crypto. You are gambling on crypto. Okay, there's a theory called the greater fool. And before I came live, I was watching a video back in 1999, and we're talking about dot-coms, and it's a new way of making money, and the whole thing is a game changer, and it's like a money-making machine, and people are making millions overnight, and you've got to get into it. And then what happened? 1999, what happened? Bang, massive crash. The dot-com bubble absolutely crashed. All these people that were riding this massive wave, making 10x, 100x returns on their investments, lost all of it. People killing themselves, people ruined, completely ruined. And, you know, it's taken them 20 years to recover. And so I think kind of that's where we are right now. We could be right exactly there where we are now. Now, don't get me wrong, I've still got money that I put into cryptocurrency. But it, as a percentage of the money that I allocate every single month, it's a tiny amount. It's 10%. So any money that I invest or pay down mortgages with, I think we covered this, didn't we? Let me tell you what those figures are, because not everybody watches all of the podcasts. But my investment strategy is 10% in crypto, 30% paying off debt, like mortgage debt, 50% is saving up for a new property, and 10% goes into an ISA. Now, as it happens, for 50% that I'm saving up for a new property, that actually goes into an ISA as well. It's allocated over to one side right now. But 10% into an ISA, 50% is saving up for a new property, 30% is to pay down mortgage debt, and 10% goes into crypto. Now, I see people, and they're putting 30 and 40 and 50 and 80% into crypto. And I'm like, okay, have you got ISAs? Nope. Have you got property rentals? Nope. Have you got any other investments? Nope. And they're literally putting it all on black on the roulette to double the money. And that's fine 50% of the time. Unfortunately, you don't know which 50%, which side that happens to be. Is it red that's coming up, or is it black that's coming up on that roulette table? And I don't want that for cryptocurrency. The idea here is that we're buying property in the lowest risk, the most boring way possible. And not investing in crypto is boring. Investing in a crypto, you're holding on to the edge of your seat, and you wake up, and the next day you're checking your investments, and you're, oh my God, it's gone up 20%. Oh my God, it's gone down 30%. And you're like, where is it going to be tomorrow? And your heart's pumping out of your chest. And we don't want that. We want nice, calm, boring as fuck. That's what will make your money over the next 10 years, 20 years, 30 years. You want a wild ride? You go and invest in crypto. Remortgage the house, put it all in. That's definitely not financial advice. Woof! You are going to have some fun. You might be divorced. You might be bankrupt, but you're going to have some fun along the way. Look, if that's where you want to get your kicks, do it. But just do 50 quid, £100, and trade the markets knowing that that's your limit. But I think that's, you know, we talk about Gamblers Anonymous and all that kind of thing. I think that's a slippery slope down to the bottom. And I don't want that. I want us to get rich slow, but I want us to get rich definitely. And so open an ISA, move some money over to an ISA, invest a small amount into crypto, contemplate where you are debt-wise. And actually, before you even open an ISA, if you're carrying £20,000 worth of credit card debt, instantly you can get a 15% return on that money. Instantly. If you've got £20,000 of credit card debt, you want to know how to do it? Pay off your bloody credit cards. And people go, oh, well, I've only got a little bit on credit card. I've got £1,800. Right, pay it off. Yeah, but it's 0% interest. Yeah, but it will always be. Pay the damn thing off. Why are you carrying debt? Get rid of debt. It's as simple as that. Unless the debt is paying you more money than the debt costs, right? It's bad debt. What I mean by that is, if you've got a mortgage on a house, that's debt. But if the mortgage is 300 and the house is pulling in 600, you're 300 quid up. That's good debt because you're using the debt to generate more cash flow than you're spending. Bad debt is where you have, you've spent something on a mortgage, on a credit card or on stores, like a store card to buy some clothes or even a car loan, potentially, depending on what that car loan is, could be bad debt. Depends on the car, okay? If you're paying for a very nice BMW at £800 a month or a nice Range Rover at £800 a month, but you've got no assets paying for that, in my opinion, that's bad debt. You should be driving £100 a month Nissan X-Trail. I just swapped my car for a Nissan X-Trail. I've got rid of a V6 3.7-litre Jeep. Beast of a car. You turn it on and it wakes up the whole neighbourhood and it's a gorgeous car. Boy, it was guzzling fuel. It was like a prison wrapped around me because it was just so expensive, and I'm still a tight northerner given everything else that's happened. I'm still tight, you know. And I get 350 miles out of, not even miles, kilometres, out of like 105 euros. It was just costing me so much money. So we got rid of it. And I'm now moving that money over, paying down debt into an ISA, 10% into crypto, and the rest into buying another property. And, you know, the biggest flex, and I've said this, and I need to do a podcast on this, but the biggest flex is knowing you can afford a Lambo and buying a Nissan. Right? That, for me, is a massive flex. I would rather go paddle surfing on a Monday morning at 9 o'clock in the summer than driving around a Lambo. Where am I going to go in a Lambo? I'm going to go to the supermarket and to pick up the little one. I'm going to do, like, you know, I don't know, 400 miles a month in it. Like, what's the point? 500 miles a year to have a £100,000 car? That's ridiculous. Whereas I could put that money into something that's going to continue to grow and so on. Now, at some point, you're probably going to reach, you know, if you're doing £100,000 a month, go buy yourself a Lambo, £1,000 a month, 1%, why not? But most people don't do that. They're spending, you know, they earn £4,000 a month and they're spending £800 of that £4,000 on a Land Rover. That's like 20% of their income is going on a bloody car. That's ridiculous. It's so ridiculous. Whereas, actually, if they bought more properties, they could actually then just put that money into buying a car then. And so the car becomes free, right? So we want to do this in the most boring way possible. Okay, so in order to buy your first property in a low-risk way, the other thing that you have to do is you have to invest early. So if you're 18 right now, open yourself an ISA, stick 20 quid in it, £25, whatever the minimum is, and get into the habit of investing regularly. Investing early. So we know, for example, that if you put £200 a month from the age of 18 to the age of, say, 35, okay, 15 years, the numbers are from the age of 18 to the age of 30, I mean, so that's person A. Then you have person B, and they invest the same amount of money, 200 a month, from the age of 30 to the age of 50. The first guy, at the age of 65, have actually got more money. Even though they've never invested anything else after that, they've got more money at the age of 65. The reason is compound interest. Given a long enough period of time, you have the more opportunity for compound interest. And it's one of the biggest things I really regret. I did have an ISA when I was like 18 or 19 and it had gone up, right? And I'm like, wow, it's amazing. It was 1999, I guess, when I was 17. Must have been after that because I was born in 72. So anyway, but then I took all the money out because it had gone up so much and I spent it on, well, I don't know what I spent it on. That's how irrelevant it was. Probably a car or something, because I thought, well, a car, I need a car. You have to have a car, don't you? Everybody should have a car. not realising that a car is bad debt, even though there's no loan on it, it depreciates in value. That £2,000 car that I bought back then, which was 2,300 Ford Escort, loved that car, very first car. You know, that 2,300 was worth 500 quid. And it, you know, this is 30 years ago, so it wasn't a lot relatively. But I wish I'd not bought that car. I wish I'd just kept with the ISA. And instead of 50 quid, I'd have put £100 or £200 or £300. And for me, you know, I really regret not doing that. Now, all things being told, you know, financial education wasn't as prevalent as it is now, that's for sure. But all things being told, I bought my first house at age 26. That's pretty good, I think, especially compared with today. You know, first average age of a first-time buyer is much higher than that. It's like, it's got to be, what, 38 or something? It's like 40. Ridiculous. So I actually, you know, still invested earlier. I was just happened to be 26. When I first started investing in property. But before you get to that point of investing in property, you've got to start investing in into an ISA or into a savings account. Now, there's a different type of investing you should also be doing early as well. Most people, they leave school and then they stop learning. And so one of the investments you have to make, because there's four asset classes, there's property, there's stocks and shares, and then there's, what's the other one? Business, I guess. There's a fourth one, right? And the fourth one is you. You have a fourth asset class. You should be investing in you. You should be reading the books, you should be watching the podcast, downloading podcasts, watching the YouTube videos, paying for training. I still pay for training. I bought Ty Lopez course on whatever it happened to be. I still buy training. I bought Funnel Hackers Live. I bought Tony Robbins. I still spend a lot of money on training because I'm an investor in myself before I'm an investor in stocks and shares and property and all the rest of it and businesses, because I'm important too, right? In fact, I'm more important than any of those things because it's me and I have to live with me, right? So I have to invest in myself. But you should be investing early financially and moving your money over to an ISA. I'm just checking my notes here. Yeah, so as soon as you get a job, set up the ISA. Before you even get a job, set up the ISA. Ask your parents, can you just move 25 quid over into my ISA, please? Ask your grandparents, and you start to build up from there. And then it turns from £25 a month to £50 a month to £100 a month. And you're just now getting into the habit of doing it. So let's talk about investing regularly, because this is really important. In order to buy your property in the lowest risk way as possible, you've got to start investing regularly, moving money aside so that it's protected in an ISA. You've got, you know, a Vanguard income fund or an index fund, I should say, and it's going up in line with inflation. So it's an inflation hedge and so on. But one of the things that you should be doing is every single month, you should be allocating this money over. This money, you know, £100, £500, whatever it happens to be, this money is as important as your mortgage. It's as important as your gas bill, your phone bill. Let me tell you what it's more important than, and this will shock you. It's more important than your fancy car. It's more important than nice clothes. It's more important than eating out. I made a list here. It's more important than your Starbucks coffee. It's more important than you buying new clothes, right? I spent up my budget this month already, my leisure budget, right? I bought a nice watch. It's upstairs, bought a nice watch. Anyway, I spent up. Now, my jeans that I'm wearing right now are falling apart. so I need to buy some new jeans, right? I'm not buying anything until my budget resets next month. These jeans can fall apart. Let them fall apart. I don't care. It's not in my budget. It doesn't happen. Because me investing in all the other things, where the funds are allocated, is more important than me buying new jeans, even though these are falling apart, right? It's more important than all of that stuff put together. So it's as important as your gas bill, your rent, your mortgage, what else? Food, like, you know, your urgent things. It's as important as that. You've got to get into the habit of investing regular money, like you pay rent regularly, like you pay your mortgage regularly, like you pay your car payment regularly, but it's more important than your car payment. Now, the other thing is that you want to get the amount as high as you can, as fast as you can. Because if you're 18 and saving £500 a month, you're going to do much better than the 18-year-old saving £100 a month. Because over a period of about 12 months, there's a difference of £5,000, right? So, you know, you can buy your first property much quicker. Obviously, getting to a stage where you're saving £500 can be quite hard. But imagine saving £1,000 or £1,500. Find any way that you can. Live with your parents for as long as you can. live in a house share for as long as you can. Buy the crappiest car that you can get away with and move that money over. The more money that you can save, the earlier, the richer you're going to be when you turn 40, 45 and 50. Trust me on this. If you don't want to work until you're 65 and 67, like you see, you know, see people... People get old really quick, I've noticed. And when they're in a job, you know, like you see people, they're in the 55 and it's like they're a granddad or something. And they might be a granddad, but I mean an old granddad. It's like they're 75 or in the 80s. It's like life is over. And they're 55. I'm like, what the hell are you doing? It's because they've got the same shitty job that they had 30 years ago. Save as much money as you can so that when you turn 50 and when you turn 55, you're no longer having to do that. You can go paddle surfing in the med. You can go running. You can go do your CrossFit. I should be doing CrossFit. I'm not doing my CrossFit at the moment. But you've got all these choices for a better way of life. And the only way you can do that is by investing regularly and investing as much money as you actually can. Okay, so if you do all of that, when the time is right, you can use all of that money that you've saved up to buy your first property. So when you're buying the first property, this is what I think you should be doing. First of all, you should be buying a property below market value. There's only one property that I've bought that's not been below market value, and it was an emotional purchase. I was moving into it. Biggest mistake I've made on property. Probably not, actually. I've made quite a few. But it was a big enough mistake that I still talk about it today because here we are talking about it. But all my other property deals, every single one of them, I bought below market value. And you make money when you buy, not when you sell. I learned that from No Money Down, whatever the guy's name was that wrote that book. He actually went bankrupt because he said you should never sell. And I'm like, you should sell, depending on... And he never sold. Anyway, he went bankrupt. Robert, I forgot his name. Anyway, look, you should be buying properties below market value. So if you... If you've got a property that's worth 100 and you can buy it for 80, there's £20,000 profit in there. You can do the property up. It's 110. You can now refinance it 6 months later. You can draw down 20 grand, okay, for 20 grand's worth of value that was built into it, maybe 25, maybe 30 grand. That's your deposit on property number two. Now, the downside of that, of course, is if you refinance in, is that you can't use the refinanced money and offset it against your income because Section 24 stops you from doing that. But buying a property below market value, almost every single property I've bought has been below market value. You could also use a sourcer to help try and find true discounts, not fake discounts. There's a lot of sourcers out there, don't know what they're doing, they're not insured, they're not in the PRS, they've got... you know, they're not even a data protection, for goodness sake. But they say, oh, I've got this property. It's worth 100, but you can have it for 80. And you go in and you go, oh, it needs work doing. Yeah, it needs 20 grand's worth of work doing to it. Right, well, it's not worth 100, it's worth 80. Me spending 20 grand just brings it up to its market value of 100. Where's the value in that? And it's a big thing that kind of winds me up a little bit. They go, it's 100 grand, but you can have it for 70, but it needs 30 grand doing it up. Well, it's not below market value then, is it? However, also a lot of very good sources out there, you pay £2,000, you £3,000, they're going to find you a deal that's 35% below market value, 25% below market value. Might be a big house with land on the side that you can build another house. Might be a big house that you can split into flats or into HMO and just increase your cash flow. Using property sources, I think, is a very, very good idea, as long as it's the right property sourcer. And then we're moving into adding value, which is what we just talked about, you know, split the property into flats, move it into a HMO. Can you add a garage on the side or an extra room on the side? Can you extend the back and have skylights for the kitchen with bifold doors? And then you might want to even sell that one because the profit that you make from that one will buy you two more. It just depends on the deal, okay? But you should be adding value anyway, in some way or another. Now, if you're thinking about adding value so you can refinance it, that's a brilliant idea. If you're thinking about adding value so you can get more cash flow per month, that's also a great idea. And that's something that you should be thinking about and going into more depth on. The other thing I would suggest is that when you're buying a property and when you've bought it, you know, and you're making £200-300 a month. Let's say it's 300 quid a month that you're making. Think about that. 300 quid, 10 of those properties is £3,000 a month. And for most people, that will actually pay their monthly expenses. They're now financially free, right? So just bear that in mind. You might not make 300, it might be 200 a month, and you might need 15 properties. But anyway, just bear that in mind. But when you're doing that and you're making 300 a month, you know, what was my split? 10% goes on crypto, so 30 quid there. 30%, which is what? Is that 90? Goes paying off the mortgage. Yep. 50% of that goes into saving for a new property, and 10% will go back into your ISA, so you can continue to save ready for your next one. So move some of that money into your ISA, your savings account, whatever that happens to be, and also move some of that money over into paying down a little bit of debt. Now that, in a nutshell, in a 30-minute podcast, is the lowest form of risk, lowest risky way of buying your first property, your second property, your next property. And I've got to tell you, folks, if you're thinking about buying property, you should do it. It is life-changing. My life is vastly different going into the age of 50 than most people's. I recognise that I'm also quite unique, special, some people might say, both in a nice way and in a not-so-nice way. I recognise that. I'm also a little bit weird, and I get that. I'm a little bit quirky. I get all that, okay? But I also recognise that I'm unique in that I'm one of the few who made it to get to this point. And we're not there yet. Like, you know, for me, we're still carrying too much debt. We want to pay down some debt. We've not generated enough cash flow. We want more cash flow. There's always more, isn't there, as a property investor, as an entrepreneur. There's always more we can do. And even when we do amazing things, there's always more we want to do. We can't help it. It's our Achilles heel. And we'll work till we're 90 if we can, if possible, because we love what we do, you know. But buying property over the next 25 years will change your life. There's absolutely no question. And I can say that, hand on my heart, because, and touching wood, because we've done it. And here we are living in Med, and it's a cold, crappy day, and it's overcast. But 12 o'clock, the sun will come out, because that's what always happens, even when it's overcast, living here in Spain. And it's a beautiful day, and the sun makes such a big difference, and we take the dogs for a walk along the beachfront, and when it's hot again, we're living in a sunny place where tourists come on holiday. We literally live in a holiday place, and it's amazing. Not a British holiday place, I should add. It's not Benidorm. But it's life-changing. And if you can do it, and there's so many obstacles to getting to that stage, so many obstacles that will try and put you off. But when you punch through and get onto the other side, on the other side of life, on the other side of all the bad stuff, is all the good stuff. And you've got to put the effort in. It's hard. It's depressing sometimes. And you will, you know, I remember sitting in my car, shouting at the heavens, just give me a break. Because I had a boiler go, then another boiler go, then a tenant not pay, then this happened and that happened. I'm like, please. It was like all on the same day. I'm like, and I'm an atheist, for goodness sake. And I'm like, just please let me have a break so I can get through these. I remember doing it, you know. And then the next day, you know, the clouds cleared and the sun shone and, you know, the tenant paid and the boiler man fixed the boiler and I didn't have to buy three new boilers that month and I still had to pay for two and, you know, and here we are 15, 20 years later from that day and life is different. And again, that's not to say that we don't have difficulties from time to time. Cash flow this month has been really, really tight. We have so many expenditures. We have 30 grand to pay out on various bits and bats. And we didn't have much of a choice on paying that lot out because it was Section 20... letters coming from the property management companies talking about balcony refurbishments and damp proofing a grade 2 listed building and all sorts of things, right? You know, we still have those months. And so that motivates me to have even more cash flow. So when we get them next time, it's not as tight as it was this month. This month has been a tight month. And we still got through it, despite it being a tight month. If that had been 15 years ago, you know, finding 30 grand 15 years ago, that was tough, you know? Now, that's fine. We've got that. We know where to get it from. We know what to do. We know how to pay these things off. We know how to negotiate, to have a payment plan. We know all that stuff, you know, and that's what we implement. But to get to that point is really goddamn hard. Anyway, look, I hope that's useful for you. We'll catch up with you in the next podcast. My name's Dan Latto. Have a great day. Take care. Hey, it's Dan here. Thank you for listening. Really appreciate each and every one of you. Please click like or subscribe to the entire podcast.